Welcome back, everyone. My name is Joshua Stamper. I've got the wonderful Charlie Peck with me as we're back for another episode of The Language of Behavior. And we're so glad that you are with us, especially over the summer. Hopefully you are getting some time to actually relax, rejuvenate, get some time to yourself and with your family and friends. And with that, Charlie, how's the summer been for you?
Great. Oh my gosh. It's so busy. I have a lot of nieces and nephews graduating. So there's a lot of parties.
But it's a lot of parties. It is that season, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. We've got family in town. We've got friends from other states with us. So I already have a packed house, as you know. So to have more people here, it's kind of insane. It's kind of like the beginning scene of Home Alone where there's just random people walking by and, you know, the police officer, that's me. And the situation is like, hey, and nobody's paying attention to me. So it's insanity around here. Charlie, I know you're doing a lot of work in a lot of different spaces, but one of the newer kind of branches for you is with parents and helping them. So I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's funny. So being a therapist and then working with the education industry, well, there's a lot of topics that come up that not only affect educators and staff and leaders, but parents and the kids too. Of course, it's always about the kids, but there are parents who are, you know, raising kids. And so a lot of educators are parents. Anyway, having said that, I not only have like Thriving Educator, I have Thriving Leaders, but through those programs, I've got now Thriving Parents. And that's all around the 9 essential skills and helping them get the skill sets to address their teen children's behavior. And really it's about their relationship. So it's about reconnecting, reviving the relationship and coming together because the teen years are just crucial. I mean, it's such a different time. We can't just pick them up when we want them to, like we did when they were little toddlers. So it's something very exciting. So I'm starting to get a lot of inquiries about that. So if anyone's interested, just go to thrivingeducator.org/, I believe it's parent.
We'll put it in the show notes for folks.
Put it in the show notes, please.
Yeah. It'll be easier for everyone anyways.
Just email me. But really, it's just about how are we supporting everybody who are trying to support kids? That's what it's about. And I know you're doing a ton of work too.
Lately, it's been with special education, but I've been also talking about parenting also because there's such a connection there. Obviously, my journey changed quite a bit when I became a foster parent, even though I was kind of reluctant with the training that I was getting there because I was like, I know how to parent. I really didn't know how to parent students with trauma. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of adverse effects due to the environment that our foster children are in and some of the things that they've gone through. So I think there's a lot of connection points. And so I use parenting quite a bit as far as case studies or examples through the work, especially with those who are in special education, because I think it works really, really well as far as that metaphor and the things that we can do. So yeah. I'll make sure for your work, Charlie, that again, we put that link in the show notes for folks. And then I know you got a question for this week with working with some parents. So what's the question for this week?
Yeah, this is coming up a lot. And this is also coming up in our schools. So that's why I really wanted to cover this one. So are screens changing our kids' behavior and mental health? Are screens changing our kids' behavior and mental health? It's a resounding yes. That's the simple answer. But let's break that down, right? So it's not just about the screens. It's about what the screens are doing to sleep, what they're doing to relationships, physical activity, attention, emotional regulation, their development and the critical learning periods and how it's affecting that. So there's a lot more to it to say like screens are bad because it's not about screens are bad. It's a part of our society that we have to adapt to, just like the internet, just like Industrial Revolution, just like so many social issues that have come up. And now technology is booming. So we need to learn to adapt to it. But I want to throw it back to you for a second. Overall, you have a lot of kids. What do you think? What is screen time doing to their behavior and mental health, if you've noticed?
Oh my gosh. Well, for sure. I think with, you said sleep, so I'll hunker down on that because sleep, as we know, is so important, right? And it's so closely tied to our mood, how we react to different situations, especially adverse situations throughout our day, and just how we interact with people. And so I've seen some of my children, especially my teens, they are really good about sneaking onto the devices at night. And for that, you know, we know there's plenty of data to show that the electronic devices are a stimulant. So the stimulation of that is keeping them awake, engaged in whatever that they're doing, games, watching shows, getting on social media. And then of course that interferes with their sleep. So then it's that domino effect. And as a parent, it's very easy, especially in the morning, to tell that one of my teens has been up way too late on a device because it has affected everything, their look, their mood. Sometimes it actually breaks down their immune system, so they're quicker to get sick. Just their irritation level in the morning, you can just feel it. Like they've obviously spent way too much time doing something else. And then also studies show too that, you know, a lot of our teens sleep with their device. Literally, it's like next to them in bed. So like that just seems like a poor relationship between a child and their device as far as being connected to it so closely and not having those boundaries that are necessary to make sure that they're taking good care of themselves. So I just want to kind of hunker down on sleep because I think that's one thing that as an educator, you can tell when your kids come into your classroom knowing, yeah, that kid didn't get a very good night's sleep. Or if you're a parent sitting at the breakfast table and your kid slinks down and you could tell, yeah, something went down last night that probably shouldn't have.
A lot of people come to me about that, the screens and the sleep and the parents and the educators, of course, they're the ones seeing it too when school's in session. But the parents are like, what do I do? And I say, well, what kind of structure do you have? What kind of routines? What kind of rules do you have that you've spoken with your kids about? A lot of them don't have that. They just haven't spoken about it. And that's okay. There's no judgment around that. I mean, it's not unfair judgment anyway. If you have the information and then ignore the fact that it is affecting your teen, then that's a problem. But it's really about what does work for your teen and what is not working for your teen. Where's the source of conflict there? Is it about them taking it to bed? Is it about them sneaking it? Because guess what? If they start sneaking it, number one, why are they sneaking it? Why do they need it? And that's lying when they're sneaking it. So that needs, they need to be accountable for that. And they don't get to have a device that they keep sneaking, especially when they understand the parameters. So there are things like that that we need to address. So it depends on what the problem with the screen is. And I can't say that enough. It depends on what the problem with the screen is. We need to find that out. There is a 2025 CDC study that did come out to show that there is a link that found that teens who do have a higher daily screen time have significantly increased their anxiety and depression likelihood. It doesn't even mean that the screens are the exact cause of the anxiety and depression, but higher screen use is consistently associated with more mental health symptoms. So again, we have to find out what the root cause is. We have to understand the situation. And how do we do that best? We got to talk to our kids. We got to find out what's going on. So I'm going to send that back to you. What else are you seeing? Or what else do you have to say about that? It's a big deal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think, and I can't remember where I saw it, so I wish I could acknowledge what study it was. But to your point with that research and anxiety, they were just talking about the increase in anxiety in society and the correlation between technology and anxiety. So for instance, my son and I were in New York and we were at the subway and we're waiting for the subway. And I looked to my left and I looked to my right. And Charlie, guess what every single person was doing as we were waiting for the subway?
Looking down.
You're looking down and they're on their phones. And you're talking about like social skills and loneliness and potentially lower self-esteem versus like, you know, interacting with other people. But they were talking about like that connection of dead time and boredom to our inclination to just go to our device and how that's filling so much of our day. And what that's doing, of course, is creating anxiety, depression, higher rates of lower self-esteem, all that kind of stuff. So I think there is these vices that we have and availability to just go to something when we have a gap in our day. And maybe instead of doing that, you know, we could find something else that's a little bit healthier. You know, if you're on the subway, you might see someone that's reading a book, or, you know, instead of, you know, me being bored at the house, maybe I should go for a walk for 15 minutes, then jumping on my device and just scrolling social media for that amount of time.
Yeah, well, that's right. And we have to structure it for kids. I mean, and teenagers. Teenagers aren't kids. Teenagers are teens. And we still need to structure it for them. And here's what I always tell my kids and any adolescents I work with. It's the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed, as we all know, till about the mid-20s. And so as they are developing the skills, the regulation skills, the planning skills, the time management skills, the decision-making skills, the organizational skills, those executive functioning skills.
Exactly.
And as they're developing those, we need to realize that sometimes we can give them the independence to function on their own, but we also need to be the adult and step in when they're not functioning well, when they're not doing it the way that they need to do it in order to build the skills and the habits for their future. So that's where I always say, you can manage yourself, but But when you show that you can't manage yourself well, then that's when I have to step in as your prefrontal cortex and help you with that. So yeah, that's the way we do it. But structure and routine, then there's predictability. I cannot tell you, Josh, how many parents come to me with their kids having a problem with social media. And it's usually about something else. It's usually about isolation. It's usually they're bored. It's usually that they feel there's conflict in the family and that's their escape. There's lots of reasons. And that's where their friends are. So these are kids who either don't have enough to do or they're not interested in doing something else for whatever reason. I mean, sometimes there's clinical reasons like depression. And so we need to deal with that. ADHD, they're already susceptible to that because they get a dopamine kick. And that dopamine does not last as long. It doesn't stick inside the brain or doesn't stay as long as the typical brain. And so it goes away quicker. So they need something more and more. So that screen can replace that. Problem is, it's also showing, we're also seeing that there's emotional dysregulation going on. Even like the younger kids, they get more angrier, they get more frustrated. So there's evidence of that. So we just need to understand the habits and the routine that we set up for the kids and hold them accountable for it, especially during the summer and after school and weekends.
Yeah, this is the time where there's a lot of dead time and they're at home. So it's easier to get on those devices. But like you said, it doesn't matter if you're an educator in your classroom or a parent at home, those boundaries need to exist and you need to make sure that they're not getting in the way of the lives of our kids. And obviously there's some consequences. Not to say that watching TV is all bad. You know, there's some benefits to it. And with anything, there's positive and negatives, but too much of something is always a bad thing. So for myself as a parent, we are constantly putting boundaries, using applications, even our internet, right? We've got like a Nest system where we can make sure that devices don't have access to the internet and things like that, or timers, you know, where they can only be on something for a set duration of time that is minimal versus just having free access all the time. So I think as a parent, there's a lot of ways that you can put some things in place to make sure that the kids aren't abusing the technology and being on there too long.
Yeah. Yeah. And think of what the priority is for your kid and your family. So like in our family, our kids need more movement. They love the computer. They like music. They Legos, building. Yep. They like those things, and reading. They love reading. But that's all sitting. They're sitting. These are great things to do outside of screens, but they're sitting. So we have a structure where they get a certain amount of time on screens in a day. But before they do their first block of screens, they have to do this. They have to do that. They have to do movement. And here's different ways they can do movement. They can work out. They can ride their bike. They can run, whatever. But they have to do that. They have to do their chores. Then they get a block of time. Then they do have to do something else, and then more blocks of time. So also we don't want to have it like all at once either. It's good for the brain to have the break. So it's okay to have screen time. This will be another conversation we have with David James, though, when we talk about screen time in schools and specifically cell phones. That's coming up, y'all. It's going to be a great conversation. But if we're trying to regulate that at home and give them tools at home to use, and then on top of that, 6 hours a day at school with most of that time on a screen, that's when it's become a problem. So that's a whole nother conversation.
Which we'll dive into. Like you said, we've got David James coming. He's an amazing educator out in North Carolina and excited to have him as our guest. And he's a great friend of the podcast. So amazing guy and can't wait for that conversation. Charlie, would you like to jump into our next segment, which is your favorite, Behind the Banter?
Is it? Absolutely. Do it.
Of course, it's your favorite. That's why we do this. All right. This is conference season. There's a lot of educators that are going various places. I know both of us are speaking at various conferences over the summer. And actually, you're doing one very, very soon in Las Vegas, I think.
Yes. The Innovative School Summit. It's one of my favorites. It's so exciting. Yes.
This is where this question comes from. What's your favorite conference experience that you've participated in, not as a speaker or like a conference associate, like not working the conference, but actually as a participant? What's your favorite conference experience?
So one of the that jumps out right away, when they did the rock, paper, scissors competition. Now, I will preface this with this. I am one of those people who doesn't actually love those icebreakers. I like to sit back and just learn on my own terms. even though I'm very outgoing and outspoken, I don't want to be bothered sometimes. But that I was hesitant on, but it was a blast. That was a blast. And I'm grateful that I did that. That was very memorable. So if you haven't participated in that before, find a conference or someone who will lead it, because it's actually a lot of fun and it's so simple. Yeah.
What conference was that at though?
It was in Canada. It was at some professional development conference.
Okay.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. So for me, let's see, 2017, I went with just a few people from my district out to TCEA. It's a technology conference in Texas. And the reason it was so impactful was not only the sessions were great, but I also met so many amazing folks that I'm still connected to today. One of them being Todd Nasloney, who's just a brilliant everything, author, speaker, educator, leader, person. He's just amazing. And so I've had a really close relationship specifically with him for 9 years due to the fact that I just DM'd him on Twitter and was like, hey, I'm going to your session. It'd be great to meet you. I can think of plenty of conferences that I've been at that I've made connections. And I think that's, you know, something that is a benefit. Like we go to conferences, for instance, the one in North Carolina. I mean, how many friends did we see there, Charlie? Just folks that we've built up over the time all over the country. So if you're not going to a conference this summer, we highly recommend that. And there's plenty to check out. If you need any recommendations, let us know. But I think there's a lot of not only wonderful information, but wonderful people that you can tap into at each conference.
Great.
Awesome. All right. Do you want to highlight anything before we do our last note on this topic?
I do. I want to make sure people understand that screens also might be replacing conversation. We need to be intentional about having kids and adults look each other in the eye, having conversations, putting that down out of our hands, because that is, we do see this leaning down a lot, but try to be intentional about modeling it for kids and putting it down yourself, but having conversation and putting down screens or their experience with kids like video gaming, but then pivoting to other things to talk about.
Yeah. All right. So I built a banner. So that's Charlie Peck's link there. So it's charliepeck.com/starting parent if you're interested in her services in regards to that. And of course, we'll make sure that we have in the show notes. And as always, like in the show notes, you'll see other things like a free book study with the language of behavior. I know, Charlie, there's a lot of folks that are doing book studies for the upcoming school year. And so if that's of interest to you or your organization, feel free to click that link. And of course, if you do a bulk order, you get a significant discount with our publishers. So let us know if you are interested in that. So that way you don't have to pay full price, because we want to save you money. It's a wonderful resource for so many different folks. So Charlie, it was great seeing you. Can't wait to see you again next week.
Me too. Thanks.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.